say money gave him the means just to be who he is, and so he gave him too much credit than the one he was before was the only one that he could afford. They say that money is to blame, but it's only paper, self-put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paper, self-put the blame on everything. The more you try, the more you lose. Bless you.
Out of Los Angeles, that's Ozo Motley, a six-member band of vocal activists who came together in 1995. This song, It's Only Paper, is from their 2010 album, Fire Away. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Within minutes of FBI Director James Comey's announcement yesterday that the agency's probe of Hillary Clinton's email/private server/classified information handling debacle found no evidence of criminal conduct, the presumptive Democratic Party presidential nominee was back on campaign schedule, this time keynoting a National Education Association event in Washington, D.C., touting her amended pro-education policies and tearing into Donald Trump's education agenda. Here's some of what she said yesterday about Trump.
If you want to know how Donald Trump approaches education, look at his so-called Trump University. Hard to believe, but they took advantage of vulnerable Americans, encouraging them to max out their credit cards, empty their retirement savings, destroy their financial futures. No wonder Donald Trump is being sued for fraud. The bottom line is that just like Trump shouldn't have his finger on the button or his hands on our economy, he should not have anything to do with our children's education and our public schools.
Okay, well, that was clear enough. But for certain people, including and especially our guest, that little snippet is very, very ironic. So let's talk about who our guest is. She is Haitian-born journalist, author, investigative reporter for News Junkie Post. Her name is Dadi Sherry, C-H-E-R-Y, and the first name is D-A-D-Y. She has chronicled the Clintons' sordid history of plunder in Haiti, but she is here today to add yet another chapter to the Lead Stories series we've been doing on the Clinton Foundation and its interconnected global subsidiaries that Charles Ortel, you may recall, the whistleblower who brought down GE in 2007-2008 over its over-evaluation of stock, and who claims that the Clinton Foundation is massive fraud, his term. Dadi Sherry explains the Clintons' role in one of the largest, the biggest scams in higher education, a Wall Street-backed company called Laureate Education. And, Dadi, you have a lot to do today.
Yes.
But first, let me welcome you. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, please be back.
I'm going to ask the audience to be a bit patient because it's slightly complicated, but we have the best guide that we can possibly find to help us through this maze and to help us understand how ironic that statement was of Hillary Clinton just yesterday about Donald Trump, basically his fraudulent education scheme. So I'm sure hearing that today, Dadi, it also occurred to you that that had a certain resonance to it, especially based on your article that you published in News Junkie Post. Dadi Sherry, by the way, is the author of We Have Dared to Be Free, Haiti's Struggle Against Occupation. So what, I'll ask you just to give us the overview, what about Hillary Clinton's statement that we just heard was ironic to you?
I mean, this is the epitome of chutzpah. It's just incredible that she would attack Donald Trump. Donald Trump is small fish compared to Laureate University, for which Bill Clinton was the honorary chancellor. So he was named honorary chancellor of Laureate Education in 2010, about 1 year after his wife became Secretary of State. And it's also not coincidental that this was 1 year after he became the UN Special Envoy to Haiti, because in his role as honorary chancellor of Laureate, he really used his international connections.
But well, he also got a small fee for being the honorary chancellor.
Oh, yes.
How small was that fee?
So the Clintons, when they left the White House, they were destitute. They had been through the whole Monica Lewinsky and impeachment thing and spent all their money on legal bills, and they had no money. And now they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and a lot of it is because of Laureate. Bill Clinton got $16.5 million as chancellor, honorary chancellor of Laureate Education from 2010 to 2014. And in addition to that, he got more than $4 million for speeches that he gave at various Laureate university places. And he helped to build this Laureate University thing, which started out as a bunch of tutoring schools, a little tutoring chain, and went public in 2007 and started calling itself Laureate Education. He made that thing a multi-billion-dollar business with 88 schools, 88 for-profit schools throughout the world, and more than 1 million students. So,
well, let's back up a little
university
bit.
Because is nothing.
You know the story, so you're going already at your customary speed. For those of us, we're just trying to keep pace here. This Laureate conglomerate that was formed, give us some background as to what it is and how it came to be. And how did the Clintons factor into its spectacular rise and global success?
So Laureate University was started by this man called Douglas Becker. He's 49 years old. He's now the chair and CEO of Laureate Education. And Laureate Education calls itself quite liberally Laureate University. Okay. And that's the conglomerate that has 88 for-profit schools and 1 million students all over the world. Now, this person, Douglas Becker, he's not himself a university graduate. He was working in a computer land store when he was in high school, and then he sold the idea of a swipe card with patient information to Blue Cross Blue Shield, and that made him some money. It's not clear how much money that was, but it was enough for him to invest in this business called Sylvan Learning Systems, which is a chain of tutoring shops, really. It was a tutoring chain. And in 1993, he took this public, and it became very profitable. And in 1999, he decided to raise it up a notch, and he started buying universities that were in financial trouble. So the first university he bought was called Universidad Europea de Madrid. Okay, and what they do, all these for-profit places, and where Laureate is actually buying real universities that are going bankrupt, okay, and they keep the name, and they pretend to have the same reputation as the previous university, but in fact, they change it completely. They focus, they are for-profit. Most universities we know are non-profit. They exist to teach and to pay their overhead and to pay their teachers. These universities are there to make money. And to make money, they have to recruit students. They spend a lot of money on advertising and recruitment.
Well, hold on again. Let's take a little pause here, because you already said something that is worth pursuing in greater detail. And that is, here's a young man who himself, as you said, does not have a college education, but saw an opportunity, a business opportunity, and he proceeds with it. Mm-hmm. He starts basically collecting failing, legitimate, if you will, educational institutions, and begins to consolidate them. And so Laureate, Laureate, was born. Now, you mentioned that it went from public to private, and that in the world of finance raises some questions about how do you go from public to private without essentially a conflict of interest there, in that according to Charles Ortel, as I read his analysis of it, because you are the same owner, you're the same owner when it was public, and you are still the same owner when it's going private or public, you therefore have knowledge of the market that gives you an advantage, and you can play both sides of the fence, which raises some questions about conflict of interest. How did he pull this off to go from the small collection of institutions that he had to this huge global conglomerate backed by major, major amounts of money from Wall Street hedge funds?
Yeah, I talked to Ortel about that, and he had a lot of questions about it. And as you say, yes, there are conflicts of interest, because you have the major stock owners, the folks who are buying, who have a lot of information that the public stock owners don't have. And this does happen, that you take a big company private, but what you do is you hire somebody independent to do all the business, and they are held to very strict standards, and they're supposed to write extensive reports and so on. And Ortel thinks that the whole thing was done very, very poorly. He has a lot of questions about it. For one thing, it took over 15 months to get done. And, you know, and they did the buyout, and it was a big deal, $3.4 billion. And the main people involved were Henry Kravitz of KKR, Kohlberg, Kravitz, and Roberts. His stake in it was $487 million, and it went to $711 million in 3 years. Another person involved was Stephen Cohen of Point72 Asset Management, and at the time it was called SAC Capital Management. And the same person in 2014 had to pay out $1.2 billion to the Justice Department for allegations of insider trading in another deal. And so there are plenty of questions about the Laureate deal itself. Citigroup was also involved.
Okay, so now we have the formation of what will seem to be a global behemoth. You have a young guy in the middle of all of this, the guy who originated these ideas. How does he rent the credibility, or how does he leverage the credibility of the Clintons to, A, get access to this money from Wall Street, and B, to accumulate all these institutions into something that looks like and sounds like and smells like a legitimate university operation, but it's really a for-profit entity?
Well, he became involved with the Clinton Foundation, of course, and became a donor to the Clinton Foundation. That's how he got involved with the Clintons. Then in 2010, he invited Clinton, he gave Clinton this job as honorary chancellor, and started paying Clinton millions of dollars. And the Clintons became very, very rich from this. And not only did Clinton get a lot of money from this, he also put his people on the board of Laureate University. His former Secretary of Education, Richard Riley, is now on the board of Laureate. Clinton's former Secretary of Housing and Development, Henry Cisneros, is on the board. His former head of U.S. Information Agency, Joseph Duffy, is also on the board, you see. So this Laureate University, it's very hard to see where the Clinton administration ends and where Laureate begins. And I think about this and I think, well, okay. So in 2009, when Bill Clinton became U.N. Special Envoy to Haiti, this kind of kept him in the loop as far as international government, you know, rubbing elbows with heads of states and ministers of finance and ministers of foreign affairs. And so this was a way for Laureate to get somebody who could give them introduction to people in foreign governments. And in fact, Laureate has 5 schools in the United States, okay? These are Kendall College, Walden University, New School of Architecture and Design, Santa Fe University of Art and Design, and University of St. Augustine for Health Sciences. Okay, so these are just 5 colleges that are in the United States. Now, most of their universities are outside the United States. The great majority of them are in Latin America. And if you look at the Latin American countries where these universities are, they are also the same Latin American countries that are now occupying Haiti as part of the UN peacekeeping missions. The majority of these schools or these entities are in Brazil. And then after that is Chile. Okay. And in Brazil, coincidentally enough, Dilma Rousseff managed to raise the amount of money that was being given for student loans about sevenfold, you see. So this conglomerate now is able to contact politicians throughout the world and influence their education policies.
But it's more than that. Here you have the president, the former president of the United States, whose wife at the time was Secretary of State of the United States, lending his name or their name to an endeavor that has not yet even been accredited, calling it the Clinton Global Initiative University.
So
how different is it from Trump University? See what I mean? It's very interesting.
It is.
So why all of this all of this international development is going on, concentrating on Latin America and developing countries?
Absolutely.
You have, and of course, with Bill Clinton already installing some of his own cronies on the board of this entity
exactly.
To give it so much legitimacy, it is so clear what the intention is here, to give it a face of legitimacy, that this is above board, above question. He's getting $16 million in addition to other millions for making, quote, speeches in behalf of Laureate. Is Laureate University, international university, of which Bill Clinton is honorary chancellor, is it yet accredited? by any entity that you know of?
Formally, you see, what they do is they don't formally call themselves Laureate University, although they do this all the time. And then you have Clinton Global Initiative University, and there's plenty of records of it and pictures of Clinton giving speeches in front of something that says Clinton Global Initiative University. But formally, they call themselves Laureate Education, Inc., you see. And oh, and I should add, now, about this business about Hillary Clinton being Secretary of State, the State Department, while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, gave the International Youth Foundation $55 million. So this is a charity that Becker is involved in.
Becker is the founder of Laureate.
The founder of Laureate. That's right. And in addition, just before Clinton left the State Department, the U.S. government organized for the International Finance Corporation, which is part of the World Bank, to give Laureate $50 million, and for the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Korea to give Laureate another $15 million. You see, and so you have the Trump people saying, hey, you know, Clinton is trying to get rid of the competition, and Clinton is basically using State Department money to enrich themselves, and you have to wonder. So this is what the U.S. has come to, and I think about this, and I've always said, when I've observed what the Clintons were doing in Haiti, that what happens in Haiti doesn't stay in Haiti. They're going to come back to you. And they are making the U.S., you could say, a banana empire. Not a banana republic, but a banana empire. They're here, and they're doing more or less whatever they want. They are the definition of privilege.
So here's a private corporation. Here's a private corporation that has rented the services, if you will, and paid for the services of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton to situate it advantageously to even get that massive inflow of funds from Wall Street and other financiers to get itself launched in such an orbit that they start out basically just clearing the deck of likely competitors in their business, right? They are now, they land with incredible impact. And so they look legitimate. Bill Clinton is now appointed the honorary chancellor of a university headed by a guy with no college education at all. He's getting $16 million for that. His wife, who is Secretary of State at the time, makes it possible for the World Bank to give this entity, in which Bill Clinton is an officer, if you will, and he has other people installed as officers of this, other people from his administration installed on the board of directors of this entity, to get $100 million from the World Bank, $50 million from other governments, and more millions rolling in to underwrite this thing, because it is also functioning as a part of the Clinton Global Initiative. In fact, it is Clinton Global Initiative University. And it's all about education, because they believe so highly in education. And apparently, for the Clinton, education pays and pays and pays and pays and pays. Let's talk about why the focus, you think, on Latin American countries and emerging markets. Okay, we lost her there for a minute, but that's okay. Sometimes these things happen, but we're in the middle of a really, really important story, and we're simply following where Mrs. Clinton leads us. We know yesterday that she was found not to have engaged in criminal conduct And the nation is laughing today because we see so clearly that this was an attempt to scrub her clean so that she can continue to her path of claiming the Democratic Party's nomination later this month. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, and nothing should interfere with that. So the entire administration is going to bat for her. Okay, we have Dottie back. Thanks a lot for being back with us, Dottie. We thought we lost you there for a minute. But so we have all of this is happening, and to anybody's eye, especially though the eyes at the IRS and other places that are paying attention to the involvement of U.S. Individuals, let alone such high-profile individuals in foreign efforts or foreign businesses and so forth, and the question here of the possible conflict of interest in lobbying, using your office as a means of lobbying for funds for an entity from which you're getting paid, and doing so under the color of philanthropy, the question comes, how is it possible that the Clintons could have been engaging in this for so long and no alarms have been set off? Nobody is looking at this except people like Charles Ortel and you.
It is completely extraordinary that this is happening. I mean, the Clintons haven't filed taxes in many states and foreign countries where they delivered their speeches, and they've made millions of dollars delivering speeches. They have not disclosed their transactions with Laureate as related party transactions, which are IRS Form 999s, as Ortel points out. They didn't disclose that for the Clinton Foundation taxes, and they actually supposedly had to fix those taxes, and they didn't disclose it in the taxes that were fixed, and they had to swear that everything was true and correct to their knowledge, and so there seems to be basically a collapse of government regulation here. You wonder what the IRS is doing. We've seen an example of what happened with the FBI. What is the IRS doing with regard to the Clintons? They don't seem to be following any of the rules that apply to everyone else.
Well, when we lost you, the question on the table was, why was there such a strong focus on Latin American countries, the development of this so-called university in Latin American countries and in so-called developing countries?
I smiled because when I listened to the whole Clinton speech from Tuesday, and I smiled when she attacked Trump University and she said that Trump made vulnerable Americans max out their credit cards.
Yes.
I believe that basically the idea is that it is not okay to con Americans, but it is okay to do the same thing in Latin America. And what I believe happened with Latin America is Becker saw Latin America as a market because of the way Latin American education works. The colleges and universities, the state colleges and universities, are the most prestigious, and they're free, and people have to get in by examination. And as a result, only about 20% of college-age people are able to get into these universities. Anybody else who wants to go to university has to go to a private school, or they get a job. Not everybody has to go to universities, and so they decided to start selling Latin American the idea that hey, you can get anybody can get a degree. We're gonna make sure everybody gets degrees and everybody can be employed. And they've set up these places in Latin America at the same time that the governments have liberalized their student loan programs. And so this is out of control in Latin America. And interestingly enough, it's caught on in places like Turkey, you know, where you have Erdogan, and they gave Erdogan an honorary degree from one of their universities. So they're like, they function kind of like the Wizard of Oz that can give honorary degrees to anybody they want, any honorary doctorates. So they managed to get Erdogan on their side, and now they are taking off in Turkey, in places like Turkey and Asia and the Middle East. But Latin America is their base. And they are really just tearing through Latin America. And in both Brazil and in Chile, the governments have complained about the fact that graduation rates are down, numbers of students are up, but numbers of faculty are down. They even lost their accreditation from a university in Chile in 2013 because of this. This is how bad it is in Latin America. But they're just moving right along. And they're still buying new universities, and they're expanding.
So it is a franchise concept. It is not really necessarily about a dedication to quality education and providing opportunities for education. The states in these countries, the states themselves are providing free public education, even at the university level in some cases. And these universities are providing a very high level of education. The competition is admittedly quite keen for admittance. And so there must be an extraordinary appeal to this more democratic approach. Look, if I just pay, all I have to do is cough up the money and I am guaranteed a, quote, degree, unquote. And that gets me to be marketable. And even in terms of immigration, let's say they want to travel outside of Peru or outside of Chile or outside of any country toward the United States, and they can say, I have already earned an American-style education, and here it is, bearing, yes. You know, I got my degree from the chancellor. Bill Clinton.
They not only give bachelor's degrees, they give master's degrees and doctorates. Well, let me give you an example, Yutris, of the kinds of things. It's like an infographics university. I have looked at their various websites. Usually you go to a university website and you'll see their various programs and courses. And of course, you'll see their faculty, and you can go and you can look at different people and what they're doing. I have yet to find faculty in these universities, but I have found some of their educational material, which is incredibly amusing. I have this thing in front of me here that says German for beginners. And it says, German is a language of gender. Make sure you know that der is masculine, die is feminine, and das is neutral. As your vocabulary grows, stop translating from English to German and start thinking in German. Pay attention to details. When you are learning German, it is mandatory that you learn the article with a noun. And it goes on like this. And I have, you know, a whole bunch of these. They're like little infographic cards. And a lot of the education is done online. And this is what people are getting as an education in these places.
Have any of these countries where Laureate has established itself with its chancellor, Bill Clinton, have any of these countries undertaken a systemic examination of Laureate and how it's functioning and its academic programs?
Only Chile, where they pointed to this one particular university, Universidad de las Americas, which is in Santiago, Chile, and they withdrew their accreditation in 2013. And in Brazil, there was a school in Rio, IBMR, where they examined the universities, and the Rio legislature complained about them, but they didn't go as far as withdrawing their accreditation. No one has generally attacked Laureate. Nothing seems to stick to them. Attempts to sue them in the United States haven't really succeeded. Unlike other places like Corinthian that are out of business now. Corinthian was asked to pay $530 million for defrauding students, and they're out of business now. And Trump, of course, has got to show up in court in November. There are like three lawsuits against him. But Laureate seems to be chugging right along, and it seems to be protected somehow.
How much money does a student put out typically to attend this wonderful university?
It varies with the different places. Of course, in Latin America, the amount would be lower than it is in the United States. But for example, in Istanbul, that university in Turkey in Istanbul is charging $14,000 to students. And in every case, the students have got to get all of this money, essentially all of this money is coming from student loans, government loans. And this is how all these for-profits operate. They depend on government loans.
Well, this is interesting because, one, the education program, no matter where it is predicated on debt. And yes, whether you come up with the money personally or you come up with the money through an arranged student loan program, it is going to be based on debt. So this is a really interesting thing. The question then becomes, debt being a very, very integral, in fact, essential part of this education process. You don't escape incurring debt of one sort or the other. So in as much as students are encouraged, in fact, pressured to take on these debts to pay for their educations, what offsets these debts? What kind of is that the same kind of International Monetary Fund kind of debt or World Bank debt, money that is given to this entity to offset the debt of the students?
No, as far as I know, this is coming from the governments. This is coming from the governments of these various countries that are putting more money into student loans. But when you think about student loans, it's a business. The government is actually making a profit off of the student loans. Now, even if you look at the United States, just normal public universities in the United States, you have student debt that's $2 trillion in the United States. Okay, and this means that the government is making over $100 billion in profit over a decade. This translates to tens of billions of dollars in profit for the government. So the government, this is good business for the government. They loan out the money and they get interest.
But somebody has to persuade the government to basically make this money available. Is that what the Clintons, in effect, that's the Trump card that this global initiative university has over its competition, that it has the firepower and the legitimacy and the credibility because they have the Clintons on board, and including when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and can therefore, you know, leverage her position to say to a government, look, we're very much interested in what Laureate is doing in your country. What are you doing to support the students going there? Something as simple as that could change the outcome for Laureate as opposed to its competitors in a given so-called market.
Oh, yes. The competitors complain, for example, that the Laureate universities can get visas for students that they cannot. And so the path of laureate gets moved. So for the universities that are in the United States, you have students that are coming from other places in the world, and they can come to the laureate universities. The other universities, they get a huge headache. And Clinton is the Clintons, not just Bill Clinton, but Hillary Clinton. They are directly in contact with governments in these other places. And they just talk to them. They have done favors from them. They interact over all sorts of other issues. And yes, you provide the loans for the students, and we will help to build your workforce. This is kind of how it's done. They're creating a workforce. They're creating capable working people by putting them to these universities.
Is there any indication of how much money the Clintons, as a team, have made from this one venture alone? Because it doesn't seem, apart from that $16.5 million that showed up on their tax forms, it doesn't seem like there's any other kind of trace as to the money that they are making from this venture and where it's going.
Yes, they have become very rich, and it is not clear how much money has come from this venture. There is all sorts of money that has disappeared through the Clinton Foundation, and it is not clear where it goes, not at all.
I want to bring you back home, if you will,
that
to
they
Haiti.
Would have made...
You said that... What occurs in Haiti doesn't stay in Haiti. And it is in Haiti that the Clintons, as you have been discussing with us and others have been discussing with us, it is in Haiti that you get a really interesting profile of the Clintons as very, very cutthroat, savvy, self-centered, narcissistic business people. And that's their primary interest, making money. A number of ventures surfaced, including the mining rights in Haiti that were associated with Hillary Clinton and her brother. But this is an election year also in Haiti, and Hillary Clinton personally had installed the ex-president, Michel Martelly. What is evidencing itself in Haiti now with regard to the Clintons' interests? Are they changing, or are you seeing still the strong hand of the Clintons in the political situation in Haiti?
The Clintons have not showed up in Haiti for a while. And ever since Clinton started to campaign, she's kind of distanced herself from Haiti so that people don't keep talking about her in Haiti. Even photos of Clinton's in Haiti have kind of disappeared. And so they don't like this association. This association was very, very heavy-handed and very brutal. I mean, they just went in at after the earthquake and formed this organization, the IHRC, of a group of their rich friends, demanded that the country be put to a state of emergency and have Clinton run the reconstruction efforts. Now, I look at this. This organization that they funded, where everybody had to put money on the table or had to forgive debt, for example, as probably an example of how they will run things in the United States. You come to the table, you put down some money, and we'll give you business. And in a way, I mean, it started happening even before, it's happening already through the Clinton Foundation. We keep finding all these connections with the Clinton Foundation, getting money and people becoming superdelegates, or, the Clinton Foundation getting money and people getting mining contracts and so on. And so I see this. And I also see even small things like AP, Associated Press, calling for Clinton before she had won California, and this identical thing was done in Haiti, where a prime minister was supposed to be named, and normally a prime minister is nominated by a president and then approved by the parliament. But then you had AP and Reuters and a bunch of mainstream organizations declare after the president nominated him that he was in fact prime minister. And he became prime minister by default, just like that, because the press, the American press, had declared him prime minister. And so, I see this, and I see the way that the mainstream press is getting used, the way that business is involved in this, and the way that the laws are getting just completely brushed aside, like the way Clinton walked into Haiti. She literally came to Haiti and declared that a presidential candidate who had come up fifth in the elections should be in the runoff, and then he was in the runoff, and then he ran. Now, how can we say that somebody like that has any respect for democracy? But this is what's happening right now in the United States, and it looks like she's on her way to becoming president of the United States, even with her problems with the FBI, it doesn't matter what happens. She is the epitome of privilege. She has her own private law, and everyone else has a different law.
I want to come
IRS
back to
the FBI.
Sorry, we're getting a little lapse in time, so it sounds like I'm talking over you, but it's actually just a lapse in time. I want to ask, coming back to this business model of Laureate University, this is a really incredible business model operating under the aegis of a philanthropic organization which does not have as its mandate any of this. They are not, by their charter, their job, according to the Clinton Foundation, their job is to just build a presidential library. But they're doing all these things, as has been explained here, that are in total violation of the law, and they seem to be able to operate with impunity. The business model here, and I'm talking, and I don't want even to suggest that there is a thing called conscience and morality on Wall Street, but if only to say you're moving in the interest of your investment, is it not odd that people with this kind of money on the table, with the odds of this venture coming under attack being pretty high, unless they're absolutely sure of political protection and that their investment is safe, I am lost for an explanation as to why the investors in this business would not themselves have some pretty serious questions and some very close vetting of this organization, unless in fact it is doing so well that it is delivering dividends according to plan. What do you make of this?
Well, in fact, Laureate University is trying to go public again, and it's declared more than $4 billion in debt as part of the public offering. These for-profit universities are not doing well. Their numbers of students have gone down 50%, at least the ones in the United States, since 2010 compared to now. This is dropping. People are wise to them. And in fact, generally, and this is, I think, related to the fact that everybody is talking about education, the number of students who are applying for federal aid has dropped. Okay? So it's dropped by about 15% since last year. The number of applications has dropped by about 4%, and then you had another, and typically you have another 10% that apply but don't really follow through. And so this is pretty big. The government is saying, well, we've got a $130 billion pot right there, but students aren't biting. They're onto this. They're really becoming wise to the fact that you go to college, you're just going to accumulate debt, and then you're going to be in a hole. You're going to be stuck. And these for-profit universities are the worst ones because what they are, they're it's poor people who actually apply to these universities. They are told, okay, if you get a degree from us, you can do it part-time, and at the end of it, we guarantee you a job within a year. And so people just do this. The student loans are available, and so you've got this nice bubble of student loans that's ready to explode. They get the student loans, they get themselves in debt, they go into this, and part of the reason I suspect that this is not really, really more prominent is because a lot of these people who are being conned in this are poor people. Poor people who are trying to remediate their education, go to school part-time, and get a job. They're unemployed. They want to get a job. Now, in the past, in the 1970s, 1980s, there were ways for people to do that. People could, for example, there were unions who sometimes would sponsor courses for people to take so that they could get high school equivalency, and then they could go to community college, and usually that was enough to get them a job. There aren't as many jobs, okay? Real unemployment in the United States is 11%. And so when people go to these schools thinking they're going to get a job, they're going to go into a market that's really where it's really difficult to do that. And they're going to be in debt at the end of this. And this is generally for the for-profit universities, about 60% of the people who go to these places aren't able to pay their debts after 3 years after they finish. And only about a third ever finish. And so it's absolutely horrible that poor people should get caught that way and should just accumulate debt. And the people who do this, they know that poor people are actually very, very scrupulous about paying what they owe. And so they get into debt and they really, really try to pay it, even when it's impossible. This is what these places are running on. And the government when they get paid back, they are making a profit from people's debt too.
Well, luckily, I was able to have read the Clinton and Associates Education Ponzi Scheme, written by Dadi Sherry in News Junkie Post, and you should check out the article. It is extremely detailed and very authoritatively written. NewsJunkiePost.com. And this article actually made me appreciate, the minute I heard that speech yesterday, I said, oh, forget it. She can't possibly be saying these things with a straight face. Not what we know about Laureate and the Clintons' connection to this, as you called it, a Ponzi scheme. Thanks so much for being with us today, Dadi. What's next as a follow-up to your story in News Junkie Post?
Thank you. Yes, I will continue to follow up on the Clintons and their various activities in Haiti, particularly with the mining. Gold prices are going up again, and this is bound to heat up. Also, Haitian elections are coming up, so I'm keeping an eye on that as well.
Well, we'll be talking again soon, but thank you so much for being with us today and being our guide through this maze of interconnecting and questionable dealings with respect to education abroad. And, of course, they go abroad and do these dirty things and try to maintain a pristine profile here at home. So yes. It's important to always compare and contrast. That's one of the basic high school techniques, compare and contrast. So thank you for equipping us with that ability and skill to compare and contrast Hillary Clinton's statements and commitment to education as she espoused them yesterday and the real history of the Clintons abroad and the exploitation of poor people all over the world. Thanks so much for your work.
Thank you, Yutris. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Bye. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it opened your eyes because, you see, this is the political season and you should naturally accept that you'll have an overabundance of lies and people playing with your brain all the time, playing with your head. So you have to, it's good to have not just a natural instinct to resist these kinds of things, but also to be able factually to refute and the nonsense they're telling you and to put it in perspective. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Let me know what you think about this program and what you've learned today. We'll see each other tomorrow, being Free Your Mind Friday. Get your brains in gear. See you then.
Text the forewarning people. The money made them change. The paper in the fame. The nickels in your pocket like the letters in your name. It ain't the coin, but the meaning for the change. Money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything.